welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm Laura Zaro-Kopinski, librarian and all-around book nerd, and my guest today is Julie Clark. Born and raised in Santa Monica, California, Julie Clark grew up reading books on the beach while everyone else surfed, a girl after my own heart. After attending college at University of the Pacific and a brief stint working in the athletic department at the University of California, Berkeley, she returned home to Santa Monica to teach. She now lives there with her two young sons and a golden doodle with poor impulse control. She's the author of The Ones We Choose, and her new book is The Last Flight. Julie Clark, welcome to A Bookish Home.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, I could not put the book down. I am very excited to recommend The Last Flight to listeners, and I'm just really excited to chat with you today. Before we start, we are talking during the COVID crisis. How are you doing? And I know this is sort of a crazy time to have a book come out. So how is all that going?
It is a crazy time to have a book come out. All of my events have been canceled, my travel. Staying at home feels very normal to me, though. I'm not a huge extrovert, so most of our activities haven't really changed a whole lot. You know, a few things have gone online. But, you know, I'm in my happy place at home, which is where I love to be. My dog is thrilled. Life has just improved for him 100-fold. You know, we're just taking it one day at a time. I'm hopeful the book will do well, and we've had some really amazing opportunities. So, you know, we're doing what we can do, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm happy that you can still do a virtual book tour of sorts.
Yes.
As I was thinking about the book, I was just thinking about how when I was reading it, you know, it was the kind of book that I stayed up way too late flipping the pages because I had to know what happened. And I think right now, it's like in some ways, I'm like, oh, maybe was I wanting something that was like gonna, you know, get my heart racing, but it turned out to be so perfect for these times because it was like giving me something to be anxious about that was not real and not the news and not anything in real life. And just so completely absorbing. Are you getting that feedback from people that this is like such a time that they want to escape into a book like this?
Yes. And I think that, the appeal that a lot of readers are finding about The Last Flight is that, the problems that my main characters face are nothing like the problems that we're dealing with right now. And so even though their problems are scary and significant and high stakes, they're very typical, scary, high stakes problems that sort of remind us of a time in the past, you know, before a virus has taken over our world, basically.
Yes. So. Yeah. It's different problems to focus on. Well, let's back up a little bit. Can you just tell us a little bit about the two characters at the center of the story? And it's the kind of book where I get nervous about giving too much away. So I will let you give the description.
So the story is about Claire Cook, who's married into a very powerful political dynasty. Her husband, Rory, is the son of a beloved senator. And this family is really second only to the Kennedys kind of fame, very much beloved, very progressive. And everybody loves Rory Cook, who is Claire's husband. But what they don't know is that behind closed doors, Rory is incredibly abusive. He's dangerous. He's escalating. And Claire, instead of cowering and, you know, trying to justify her choices, Claire has had enough and she has made a plan to leave. She is going to disappear from a campaign event, and she's found a way to do it in which Rory will never find her. She's gotten a new identity. She's gotten a new passport. She's going to be a completely new person. And of course, her plan falls apart. And so she finds herself in a very desperate situation, hours away from her husband finding out what she was about to do. And she's in an airport bar, and she meets another woman who is also kind of in dire straits, and over a drink, they kind of start talking to each other and they hatch a last minute plan to trade plane tickets. Claire will travel to Oakland as Eva, and Eva will travel to Puerto Rico as Claire. And they think that that swap will give each of them a chance to sort of fall off the grid. Where they actually are is not a place where anybody would think to look for them. And so when Claire gets off the plane in Oakland, she sees that the plane to Puerto Rico crashed and that she doesn't just have a head start, she has a new start. And so she takes over Eva's identity and decides to become Eva. But what she doesn't know is that Eva wasn't really honest with her about what she was running from, and that there are people in Oakland who have noticed that Eva's gone missing.
I love that it is, like, on a plot level, I'm constantly turning the pages. I keep guessing wrongly, trying to figure out what's going on. But also the characters are so well developed. And I want to read, I thought this description was really good. You got a starred review from Kirkus, and they wrote, "A tense and engaging woman-centric thriller. Propulsive prose drives Clark's tale of the intersecting lives of these two smart and resourceful women. An emphasis is placed on the importance of female friendship and support. Readers will surely find themselves hopelessly invested in Claire's and Eva's ultimate fates." And I feel like that really drives home so much of what I loved about the book. And, you know, it got me wondering too. I saw a quote from you about how you didn't want the book to fall into the trope of the crazy, unbalanced, unreliable female narrator, which I so appreciate, because I feel like we're seeing that a lot. And this was just so different. I would just love to hear about sort of the spark of inspiration for this. And also, if there was one character's story that came to you first, just I guess some of the background of the book.
Sure. Well, I started writing this book in 2017, and I originally had my main character as just being Claire, and she was going to disappear somehow in some way. Eva didn't come until later, but you know, I wanted to step away from the unreliable female narrator. Not because they're not fun books to read, because they are really fun books to read, because I love it when an author can trick me into trusting somebody and then pull the rug out from under me. But I equally love it when it's the opposite, when we're not sure we can trust somebody and then it turns out we absolutely can trust them. I love that as well. But I really feel like in these political times and sort of what women as a whole are struggling with right now, I feel a responsibility to be writing strong female characters. I feel like who we choose to put on the page as authors is certainly reflective of what we want to see in the world. So I felt sort of an obligation to my, you know, fellow female warriors out there and to my students as well, who are growing up into a world where we're fighting really hard so that women's voices are equal to anyone else's. And so I found, you know, as I was writing this book, the Me Too era was really exploding, and it just felt very serendipitous of, you know, wow, all of these things are kind of coming together. And a lot of those issues found their way into kind of the themes of my story. And I wanted my two characters, Eva and Claire, to be sort of fighting back against that and not accepting that as a status quo and not accepting that, you know, because their truth is different from a man's truth, that it doesn't hold as much weight. And so that was really important for me to kind of get down on the page, and it all just kind of seemed to be happening at a time where it was also playing out in the media in all areas of our country, really.
Yeah, it's so timely. And it is chilling as you're reading to think about, you know, how likely it is that Claire would be believed about what's going on behind closed doors. And that was making me wonder, because she does have to go to great lengths to try to, you know, separate herself and sort of make her escape. What kind of research went into the book? And was that a lengthy process?
I spent a lot of time listening to podcasts and really, you know, kind of immersing myself into women's stories, and especially abused women's stories, because I feel like it's really easy for those of us who haven't been physically abused to stand back and say, well, I just wouldn't put up with that. But I do think that there is a you know, breaking down of somebody's psyche and the ability that somebody else has to sort of retrain and refine a woman's truth in order to control them. And it's not as simple as just saying stop. And it's not as simple as, you know, saying, you know, what you're doing is making me feel, you know. And I think that it's important for all of us to acknowledge that when a woman comes forward, that, you know, whatever steps she takes, and yes, the steps that Claire takes are a little more extreme than probably you or I would take. It's sort of why it's fiction. But, you know, you can't solve the problem of an abuser by using I statements like that. If you could, it wouldn't be an abusive relationship, you know? So there's a certain element of, you know, we need to kind of step back and stop questioning the choices that some of these women are making and try harder to, you know, look for solutions rather than look for reasons why it happened.
Yeah, it is frightening too to think about. I was thinking about these characters, just reading some of the different reports, which should be on our mind, but I hadn't really thought about it that yes, if you're in an abusive situation, being in this quarantine is very, very dangerous. And so that in some ways, this book is you know, I'm always interested in books that are really allowing me to walk into someone else's shoes and you know, as much as this is a thriller, it is very thought-provoking as well. I feel like it rides that line really well. Well, I am curious too. Your first book, the ones we choose, is very different, and it was making me wonder, sort of, if you wanted to take on a different genre with The Last Flight, or if the story just sort of came to you that way, I guess, sort of how did that come about?
The idea for The Last Flight came to me while I was still midway through drafting The Ones We Choose. So it's been with me for a very long time. The Ones We Choose is definitely a family drama. It has the same sense of page turning, have to keep turning the page to see what will happen next vibe to it. It's very character driven, but The Last Flight is very character driven too. So I think what both books have in common is the emotional stakes and the character development that is just really important for me when I read books. Like, that's really the piece that I love the most, when I can really emotionally connect, not with just the story and what's happening, but with the people in the story. And so in that sense, both books are similar, even though The Ones We Choose is more of a family drama and The Last Flight is much more of a thriller slash suspense book. They both carry that emotional element.
That's great. Those are always the books that I'm drawn to. It makes me wonder too. I'm always fascinated by sort of the writing journey of authors. I'm curious if there are particular books or authors that had a big influence on you. And then just along with that, have you always wanted to be a writer? How did some of that journey unfold?
Yeah, I always wanted to be a writer, and it just was never something that I pursued seriously when I was in school. You know, I dabbled a little bit in writing after I graduated from college, and that just didn't really go anywhere. And then I got married and had kids and got divorced, and you know, I teach, and there's just all kinds of time sucks on your time, you know, that keep you from sitting down and doing something that feels a little frivolous. And it feels a little like, well, everybody wants to write a book. What makes me different? You know, everyone's got a novel that they want to write. And I just decided, you know, I had lost a friend to cancer in 2012. And I just kind of realized, like, you know, you don't always have a lot of time to do things that you want to do, and if you don't sit down and do them. And so I sat down and wrote a book. It took me maybe 4 months to draft it, and I thought it was pretty terrific. And I started querying it immediately. And of course, it didn't go anywhere because I had a lot to learn. And at that point, a different idea had occurred to me, and that idea turned out to be The Ones We Choose. And it took me about 4 years from drafting it to publication. And I just kind of went from there, you know, I just kept going and doing the next thing on the list that I needed to do in order to make that dream come true. And after a while, you've invested so much time in it that it just seems silly not to keep going. You know, I mean, I'd spend hours and hours every day, every week working on a draft of a novel. And it just seemed like, well, why would I stop now? You know, what a waste.
It's
so I just kept going.
Yeah, it's interesting too. I had read a little bit about your story, and I feel like I keep seeing this as a common denominator with so many of the authors I interviewed, but you talked about how for so long you were writing from 4 a.m. to 6 a.m., and which is super inspiring. And also I feel like I am hearing stories like that from so many successful authors who I think sometimes we have this image in our mind of like, the author in a cabin in the woods that just like spends all their time writing and it, you know, flows out of them and they have no responsibilities. But I feel like so many of the authors I talk to just make it work and find that time. And did you ever, I guess, you know, that's hard to stick to. And I guess just like how, I mean, I know you just sort of have to do it, but how did you keep going with that? And
because I love doing it first, you know, it's not, you know, it's easy to get up and sit and write than it is to get up and like go for a 5 mile run, you know, so, you know, at least what I'm doing, I can stay in bed and do, you know, I don't need to like get up and go outside and, you know, so it's not, you know, when you think of it like that, it's certainly of the two choices, a lot easier to do what I'm doing. But, you know, fitting it in, yeah, you can write an entire book in 2 hours a day. I mean, you absolutely can, but you have to be dedicated. And, you know, there's a quote that I have up in the wall in my office by my computer that says, you know, in order to publish a book, you have to do two things. One, think of yourself as a worker, and two, show up at the job. Like, that's it. So yeah. If you can do those two things, then you're good to go. You can do this. But you have to fit it in, and you have to fit it in every day. You can't do it just when you feel like it, or you'll find that you're never feeling like it.
Yep. And you need that momentum too. Mm-hmm. So you were querying and querying. How did The Ones We Choose come to be? When did that start to get some traction?
I entered it into a contest called Pitch Wars to help get a literary agent because I knew that I wanted to publish with a big five publisher. And so I needed an agent to do that work for me. I couldn't just submit myself. And so Pitch Wars is a contest run by Brenda Drake, and it partners up unpublished writers with published writers. And I was lucky enough to work with two phenomenal authors, Karma Brown and Susan Bishop Crispell, and they read my manuscript multiple times. They offered so much critical feedback. They honestly were just so helpful and supportive. And then once your manuscript is in tip-top shape, there's an agent round, and agents are able to read the first 150 words or so of your book and, you know, ask for the full, or, you know, want to read more. And so I was able to get probably, I think I had something like 24 full requests from agents for the manuscript and ended up with 8 agent offers. So it was a really positive experience for me and basically allowed me to sort of see that like, wow, I can really do this. You know, this book actually might become something. And from there it was, you know, I signed with an agent, not somebody that I actually got a request through Pitch Wars, but I had queried her at the same time because she was my dream agent and she offered pretty quickly. And so we just went from there.
And how long did it take from getting the agent to getting your publisher?
It took, let's see, probably, I want to say about 6 months. I went through another serious round of revisions with my agent before we took it out on submission. And we were out on submission with editors for, I want to say, about a month. And then got an offer from Simon & Schuster.
That's awesome. And do you have, I'm always interested how writers sort of help one another and support one another during this process. Were you, like, in addition to Pitch Wars, part of different, like, writing groups or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in a bunch of groups on Facebook. There are a bunch of binders groups for, you know, women and female identifying writers on Facebook. And I've met a lot of writers that way and made a lot of really good friends and, you know, lifelong friends, really, who are really critical to writing and really helped me sort of focus my ideas for The Last Flight and helped me sort of bring it to where we are right now.
Well, one of the things I love to hear is what authors are reading. And it's kind of an interesting time, I think, to be a writer, but also to be a reader. I think some of us are gravitating toward different books. We're also, you know, I know for me, I'm, you know, getting ebooks from the public library. I'm ordering from my local bookstore, but it's different. You know, we're not going and browsing the shelves like we usually are. It's just definitely a different time to be a reader. What have you been reading lately? And have you noticed sort of any big changes in your reading life?
You know, I'm a pretty consistent reader. I've heard from a lot of people who are saying that it's really hard to focus and it's really hard to read right now. And I get that, but, reading is really the only way that I can escape. And I've read a lot of great books in the last, I want to say 4 months or so, so many, I could hardly name them, but I'll try. I read Long Bright River by Liz Moore. That was fantastic. Really tense, beautifully written book. I read Una Out of Order by Margarita Montemore, which I loved. It was hysterical and light and funny and was just a treat to read. I loved it. I just finished Pretty Things by Janelle Brown, which she's a favorite author of mine. I've loved everything she's written. And I wasn't sure how she'd be able to top Watch Me Disappear, because that is my favorite book that she's written by far. But I don't know, Pretty Things really raised the bar. It was fantastic. And one book I'm really looking forward to, and it won't come out until this October, is Goodnight Beautiful by Amy Molloy. I've been able to read an early version of that, and it is brilliant. I cannot recommend it enough. It will blow your mind. It's so good.
Ooh,
so have that
awesome.
On your radar.
I will. Yeah. Yeah, I'll link to all of these. And it's making me wonder, too, do you have any particular, you know, besides friends and fellow writers, but any particular places online where you get a lot of your book recommendations?
There are so many great reading groups on Facebook. Christy Barrett runs a great group. There's Great Thoughts, Great Readers. There's Paul Poppy Writers. There's all kinds of really phenomenal, huge book groups on Facebook where you can get tremendous book suggestions. The Instagram community, Jordy's Book Club, Caitlin Reads Books. I mean, I would have to look at my list to see, you know, what all I have. So I follow so many, I can't even keep track of them. But there are so many places to get good book recommendations. You can easily find your people. You can find people who love the same books that you love, romance, thrillers, historical fiction, you know, contemporary fiction, whatever it is. There are groups for them. Like in these social media days, there are just so many options and resources, not to mention your local indie bookstores who are so well-versed and so educated on new releases and what's selling and what's hot and giving, you know, if you're interested in something, your local bookstore can, you know, put the right book in your hands because they read everything. So,
you know, I was going to ask you about that because I know we're all, you know, concerned about indie bookstores and want to support them. Is there, if Hopefully people have their own local indie bookstore that they support. But if they don't, is there a local indie that you'd want to maybe give a shout out to if people want to purchase The Last Flight from them or check out their maybe like online offerings?
Yeah, I have some favorites that have been incredibly supportive of me. So locally, I'm in Los Angeles. So Diesel and Brentwood is a great bookstore. They're very knowledgeable and they can pretty much get their hands on whatever you might be interested in, as well as Pages, a bookstore in Manhattan Beach, whose owners have been so supportive of me and such great cheerleaders and so excited for The Last Flight. And I can't wait to get back out there again when the world opens up and do events at Diesel and do an event at Pages. Powell's Bookstore, of course, is a big favorite. I was supposed to do an event up there that unfortunately got canceled, so we're hoping to reschedule that. I was supposed to be in conversation with April Henry, which would have been like a huge bucket list item for me. And, you know, of course, Excelsior Bay Books is one of the bookstores that I just dream of being able to go and visit and do an event there as well. So, I mean, but independent bookstores everywhere are just, it's a tremendous resource. And if buying books is not something you can do, make sure you support your local library. Librarians are the unsung heroes of our time.
I'd love to hear that. And yes, I will say, I hope people, if they can't order from their local indie, there are always ebooks from the library too. Libby and Overdrive are great. But yes, I highly recommend The Last Flight. And I hope that sometime soon, things will open back up again and you'll be able to, do some wonderful author events because I know readers are really going to want to connect and chat with you, about The Last Flight. And oh, I wanted to ask too, although I never know, this is maybe an annoying question, but, I would love to hear what's next. Although the answer might just be, I just finished this one, but I always, you know, when I love a book, I start thinking, oh, I want more.
Yeah, I'm working on a book right now, but it's pretty early days. So I'm still trying to figure out who my characters are and what it is they want. But it's a story of dark family secrets and the cost to ourselves and our children when we keep them, and sort of how that trickles down through generations. So that's sort of the gist of what I'm working on now. But like I said, it's still early days. I'm still working on it.
Well, I hope it goes well writing during this time, and we'll look forward to reading that as well. And Julie, just thank you for making the time to come on A Bookish Home. And I hope people go pick up The Last Flight.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a great time. Thank you.
For links to all of the books mentioned on this week's episode, you can head to abookishhome.com, and there you'll also find other book recommendations and ideas for creating a culture of reading in your home. You can also follow me on social media at abookishhome. Thanks for listening, and happy reading.